Okay, so thank you so far to everybody else who's brought up some really good stuff. I was actually wondering how all of this was going to kind of weave together, and for Brittany and Amber for coming up with the topics and challenging all of us to come meet that. The topic that I was given tonight was teaching the Bible to different age groups. I put mine and Tracy's name on this because a lot of this stuff she exemplifies better than I do in the classroom, and I learned a lot of it from just watching her, and she has a degree in childhood education where I learned some of the information and built upon that. So there's really only three slides, and it kind of folds into building from where the others, I think, have already started, talking about some psychology structure stuff, and then ending with how can we use it and what does it mean as far as a Bible story. So that first slide up there is really just... That first slide up there, the next one, there we go, is really about the environment to be able to start talking about this. And really the other teachers or other presenters have already kind of touched on this. But really the thing that they're looking for the kids is first safety. They want to be able to be in a safe environment, understand what's going on, which means they need to know what the rules are and that they're going to be applied fairly, consistently. And when they have that, they're going to be able to then start trusting you. What does that mean by start trusting you? Can they ask a question? Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. But if you can't, if they don't trust you, then they never will. And if they never do, then they're probably not engaging. And the other presenters kind of already brought up the importance of being able to get them to engage so that they can ask that question. And then the second piece of that is, will you tell them the truth? And sometimes that means, which I think Pastor Tim might get to a little bit later, saying, I don't know. Or, let's look at that together. Sometimes it might mean, I don't think I can answer that for you right now. But you don't want to lie to them or give them a half answer. Kids can smell lies a mile away. It's innate in their blood and their nature somehow. And so if you do that to them, they will just immediately write you down, write you off, and stop trusting you. Lastly, respect. What do I mean by that? Treat them as a person. I've seen it, not necessarily here, and I've seen it. So the classic example, grandma talking to a kid, when they talk down to that kid, they're not treating him as a person. They're treating him as something else, like a pet or a something, you know, like that. Just they're not treating them as if they are a real bona fide person that deserves the respect of a person. And so the way that demonstrates it, so I put that word up there, or that phrase up there, zone of proximal development. People will do this naturally. What it is when, let me explain it this way. Sunday school, they're coming in here to learn. To learn, any one of us must be stretched. We must be put into a place where we're being challenged. That zone of proximal development is a psychology term. It basically means that you're beyond your own limits, but not into the area where it is dangerous, where you're going to hurt yourself. Now, whether that's physical, emotional, intellectual, whatever it is, you want to be. That's where the kid needs to be in order to be able to learn something. So people will naturally do this with the kids when they talk to them. Basically, if you notice parents, when they talk to their kids, they never talk to them as if they're a straight adult. But they don't talk to them in the same language that they're using. They usually talk to them in language just above the level that they're using, dragging that kid up and making them work in order to be able to engage and understand. And kids thrive on this. We thrive on this as humans, and that's what helps us learn all the time. Okay, so next slide. Knowing who you're talking to, and this is really the part where it gets into the topic of being able to teach to different age groups. There was this guy named PJ, and he was a psychologist that developed these cognitive, did I write it down over here? I didn't. It just fell out of my head. This has been happening to me all week. Terms have just been escaping my mind. Cognitive development. Four stages of childhood cognitive development. And so he has those stages up here, sensory motor stage, pre-operational stage, concrete operational stage, and formal operational stage. Those grade links that I put up there are what I am trying to apply those to for purposes of being able to understand it inside of the context here. Those weren't necessarily his age groups that he put up there. I'm going to kind of ignore the first one because the first one's really infants, toddlers, you know, they put everything in their mouths, they're grabbing everything they can, they're bumping their heads against the walls. And why? Because they're learning everything through their senses. Sunday school is really about those next three, which are first kind of, and these are general. This isn't strict saying they everybody falls into this group. Each kid is different. Each kid has their own development skill or proficiency as they mature. So in general, pre-operational stage, what does that mean? That means that a kid is exploring the world with their mind. They are want everything to be concrete. They want and what that means for a Bible story is that you are building a story for them to connect to. You're building it with words, building it with pictures, building it with props, manipulatives, anything that can capture their imagination in order to be able to build that story. You're not going to be sitting there talking to them about, how the Trinity reveals itself in the Hebrew language in Genesis 1:1, right? They don't care about that. They want to know, in the beginning, God created. Well, God created what? Well, God created the world, you know, the earth. And then what's the earth made of? And the waters, and he separated all that, right? They want that concrete thing to be able to build a story in their mind. And if you can build that story in their mind and get them excited and show the passion that Chris mentioned, they're going to be able to walk out of here with that story in their mind. And that's going to be the building blocks for them being able to learn more and more as they go through Sunday school. Second stage, concrete operational stage. This is an area that we've been in for a while. We've been doing second through fourth grade for, I don't know, it seems like we've been in there 8 years or so. really, here, you're changing from building a story to explaining a story. So it's not just about here's the structure of the story. We're going from this place to that place. We have a journey in our story. It's also explaining certain parts of the story. This was the good guy. This was the bad guy. These are how they interacted. These are some of the things that happened. And really what kids are starting to do is they're starting to engage the world or gauge that story with their own experiences. And they're being able to start applying that. Saying, oh, well, what does that mean to me? And what would I have done if I was in that situation? They're changing their learning ability, and they're starting to engage with the story better. You can also elicit questions from the kids instead of waiting for them to ask questions. So in this type of scenario, you might ask a question like, why is this important to the story? Just a couple weeks ago, we did Joshua and the Israelites battle the Amorites. And God held the day long. So when you build that story for the pre-operational stage, those young ones, it's really about the story and the long and the fight and all these things. But then that next stage, you can start looking at it and say, so why is that important that he held the day long? What's different there? And then you can start that to get them to understand that, oh, there's a miracle there. And that's something that we've never seen or may never see ever again. And they can start to understand the grandeur of God and start to see the expanse there, which is really pushing them again up into that zone. The third stage here is Piaget calls the formal operational stage. And so what is this? It's really about applying the ideas that you're learning and starting to build principles. Now, one of the things that I believe in life is that we as people In order to be able to engage in life, we build principle models about how the world works. If we didn't, we'd kind of go crazy because we'd have to be figuring out everything out on the fly. At this stage is really where a kid is starting to build those models really well, and they're starting to expand out and stretch themselves into society more and more. And so this is really, I think, an important stage in order to be able to make sure they're getting the appropriate and correct information to build those models. And it's fun. I actually love this stage because it's just the beginning. It's like the awakening, right? You can see their minds just starting to open up. The type of question that you can ask in this type of setting is, or I'm sorry, what I meant to say is the type of question that you might actually get back from them is the type of question where it says, does that mean that, and you can see that the kid is all of a sudden extrapolating, right? So they're going, wait, I think I know what this principle is, and I want to test this principle on another idea and situation over here. And so they'll ask a question as a hypothetical in order to push the idea into a new area, and it actually challenges me when this happens in order to think about it and go, well, what does that mean? And then you get into these really fun thought exercises that you can talk about. And that's why I was saying that's probably one of my favorite stages, in order, because I can sit there and we can banter around with one of these hypotheticals and enjoy each other. The other things that I put, wait, thank you. The other way of looking at this is there is a parallel kind of learning, teaching concept, and that's those other ones that are called up there, grammar, dialectic, and rhetoric. Now, Tracy did correct me. Like I said, she knows this stuff a little bit better, that I'm not using them very exactly properly up here, but the idea of it is still there in informative. Meaning, grammar is learning the words in order to be able to talk about a subject. You can't become an expert in a subject until you learn the grammar to talk about that subject. Even if we all speak the common language, for instance, my profession is being an engineer. So, as an engineer, when I go talk about things, if you don't understand the grammar of resistance and impedance and capacitance and all these electrical engineering terms, when I come out and start talking about how the impedance of a certain trace is going to be able to affect the RF energy of people's eyes will just roll back in their head. I mean, Jacob's over there smiling and laughing at me right now because he's seen me do it before to him. But so you have to be able to learn the grammar. And so that's what those Bible stories are really doing for those young ones, is they're building the grammar of the Bible and what is going on in there for them to be able to understand the full context. The dialectic is now when you start to take those stories of grammar and you string them together to be able to build the whole story of it. So in that first part, I was really talking about we're building a story for them, and the dialectic, they're stringing those different stories together to understand the thread of what the Bible is. That doesn't mean that they get it all yet, but they're starting to be able to thread that together. And then the rhetoric is when you are proficient enough with what's going on that you can actually explain it back. And that's the part here where it doesn't fit properly, because really a rhetoric stage requires a bit more maturity than we get in the Sunday school classes. You're not going to get that usually until maybe almost high school. But the idea that it is still there, that at that stage of probably about fifth, sixth grade, some fourth graders, they're going to be able to engage enough of the grammar to be able to build a story that they can start building those models of how the world works and asking those tougher, more engaging questions of you as the teacher to be able to understand this all better. And that's really what our goal is, right? Okay, so now we can go to that next slide. So building on, or taking those building blocks of understanding what those three different types of kids, and this is what I think about when I'm trying to build a different lesson, because we've been doing this for 15 years. I think we started about when Jacob was born, maybe 16 years, a little bit before, and we've been doing it at various levels, plus doing stuff before coming to Calvary Chapel Fremont. And there are challenges and different challenges, meaning that in Sunday school, you will be, as you know, you have your class and you have an age group, and you can target that information. On Wednesday night, though, you actually have all of them in one classroom. And then there's also those Sunday mornings where something happens to a teacher, situation, life, etc. And you get a couple of classes wrapped together, and you end up with 20 kids, and half of them are K through first, and the other ones go all the way almost up to fourth grade. And you're sitting there scratching your head going, I don't know if I can talk to all these kids at the same time. So the main thing, there was a Pastor Brian Heminger over in Ghana, I still remember his sermon, but keep the main thing the main thing. Which, when we come down to it, that's really where we got to be. The main thing, why are we here with these kids? To bring them, or bring Jesus to them every single time. Or, as some I think might prefer to say it, bring them to Jesus every single time. We get the packets of material for the lesson. And as Lenora said, there's some people like this type of material, some people like that much type of material. In fact, I've had challenges with the different materials sometimes, in that you'll get a lesson where the lesson is three verses. You think, I got to fill 20 minutes with three verses. Well, what am I going to do? And then you get the other ones where it's three chapters. You're like, how am I going to bore these kids to death just reading three chapters of stuff here? And so you get the material in order to be able to work with. However, you are not held to the strict dialogue the methodology, but not the strict lesson that it gives you. You need to use that in order to be able to build the message to bring to them. Tracy had read this story once, or read a book. I think it was a book. And in this book, this lady was talking about, she was giving a lesson in a Bible story. And she says, okay, so do you guys know that animal? It's a small animal, and you can think, what's the name of it? There's this furry, and it has this little bushy tail, and it runs around during the day. Sometimes it's on the trees. What's that thing called? And she was like trying to get to this point, and the kids are like kind of quiet and not really saying anything. Finally, Johnny sticks up his hand a little bit, and she's like, yeah. And he's like, I know the answer is supposed to be Jesus, but that sure sounds like a squirrel. I mean... And I like the story for two reasons. One, because that teacher had brought them to Jesus so often that they automatically think that the answer is Jesus. And there's merit in that. I mean, you can have jokes about if you ask a question in a Sunday school class, one of three answers is going to be right more than half of the time. Jesus, God, he died on the cross. Or some form of that, right, is almost always going to be the answer half the time. And so bringing the kids to that, just to really just hammer it into their head, is great. But the second thing is that I like about that story as well is that it meant that teacher was engaging the kids enough that they actually started to turn on their brain and were listening to the story to be able to say, wait a second, that sounds something like something else, like a squirrel. What's going on here? And so bringing the tools that Miss Lenora, Miss Chris, and everybody else was talking about to be able to engage the kids fully so that they can listen, pay attention, and see the things that you're talking about. Number two there, be flexible. Not all ideas are going to work. The danger there is that you come up with an idea that you're really attached to, you bring it into the classroom, and it flops, and you just won't let it go. Not all the kids are going to react the same way. And you may have missed your target, or the day may have changed, and you have different kids in there than you thought that you were going to have. So you need to be flexible with that. We had a story, that same story, with Joshua. They went out to fight the Amorites. And in that story, the tool that they gave us was, you take these little men and you pieces of paper that have men on them. You tape them together, and you put you set up the men over there. And the point of the story of the activity was you take marbles and you roll them at the men and try to knock the men over, which was supposed to be a difficult thing to do. And so in doing so, you needed extra time to do it. So they had 1 minute to do it, and they couldn't do it in that time. And then we'd extend the timeout. Well, we had too many kids, and so they were too close to the thing, and they knocked them all over right away. And so I was like, okay, well, that didn't work. So, so let's talk about the lesson. So we had to change what we did and explain it a little bit differently and keep moving on. But you don't have to use the given structure of to bring the message if it doesn't fit the classroom or the time or the kids. Some lessons will be structured to fit that older group. Some lessons are going to be structured to fit that younger group. You don't have to keep to that. Make sure that you're targeting the group of kids that you have. Third, be aware. When you have mixed groups, mixed ages, top to bottom, you can't necessarily spend all your time with one age group, otherwise you're going to lose the other age group. You might have mixed gender, you might have single gender. Boys and girls react differently. With boys, you can run around and be a little bit more explosive, and they're like, yeah, and engage. You do that with too many girls in the classroom, and they go, ooh, and they're going to go hide in the corner, like, what the heck is going on? This guy is freaking me out. So just be aware how the kids are reacting. The other things to be aware of there. The outlier. Sometimes it's the hyperactive kid that's over here that's just wound up because he had too much sugar that morning or too many donuts or whatever. But it might also be that kid's just not quite engaging. So even though you have done all the preparation and you figured out exactly how you want this thing to go, if your eyes are down here the whole time, you're going to miss that one kid that's sitting over there that's just not quite getting pulled into it. So sometimes you need to stop, slow down, maybe ask a directed question. You got to be careful with that because that can be an embarrassing thing sometimes. But if you think you've built that relationship with them, you can do that in order to be able to pull them in. The other one to be aware of would be call it a tea party conversation. Meaning, remember playing Foursquare with a kid and you'd hit the ball back and forth and two kids would play it and the other two kids would just sit there like, this is boring. It's possible that you get one kid that you call on all the time and you get an interesting topic and you engage with him and you just lose everybody else. So be aware of the whole classroom and what's going on. And the last thing I wanted to say was you're not alone, meaning that if there's a problem of a disruption, if there's something that's not working, you're not alone, meaning that you can ask Amber or Brittany, you know what, this one kid, I really need you to either take them out or assign somebody extra in here, a junior helper, in order to sit with that kid, or something along those lines. Whatever it is, don't suffer in silence. If you're frustrated with what's going on in the classroom, I don't understand how to get through this lesson and plan it. It's just not working for me yet. Tell them, and they can help find somebody else in order to be able to come in and maybe they can say, hey, let's look at this together or find somebody else to do that with you. But yeah, just make sure that you don't get that frustration. Ms. Chris said, 80% of teachers decide, nah, this isn't what I want to do because of their frustration in the first year. And I think part of it is that when you walk into that classroom, you're sitting there, you're by yourself with all of these kids. It can get pretty stressful, and it can feel isolating to the teacher at times. But it's just because that door's closed. It's okay. There's other people there to help, right? I think I hit my... Okay. That was it. Thank you.